Hello, everyone. This is Mike Quinsey connecting the light. My guest today is Simon Stidivar. He was taken on board a ship of light and given a multidimensional book of 144 pages. And in the course of his experiences, he read the life's Akashic record, and he realized that his mission was to bring it into the physical reality. And at the age of 27, he wrote just 5 scripts of encoded information directly related to the dormant human DNA. And we're going to talk about how all this came about and about his manuscripts. So welcome to the program, Simon.
Hey, thank you very much indeed, Mike. It's nice to be here. I might have a few internet problems, but let's see how it all goes.
I'm sorry, we'll have to get Don to intervene here. I can hardly hear you. I can't make out what you're saying. It's so faint.
Okay, that any better? I'm sitting as close as I can to my microphone.
I can hear you a bit better now, yes. Otherwise, it's going to be a bit of a strain. Okay, well, my listeners heard the introduction there. You must, I don't suppose you're unique, but on the other hand, we don't come across many people that have a mission in life like you have. How did it originate that you were taken on board the ship of light? I mean, had you done some light work before that, or did you have earlier contacts?
It all actually started when I was 9 years old, back in 1972. excuse me. It was the October the 31st. It was actually Halloween, just going into All Saints Day. And I was 9 years old. My little sister was asleep in the top bunk. I was still awake, as generally boys are. And I had a physical manifestation of a little man in my bedroom.
And
that little man picked me up out of my bed, and all of a sudden we were on the ship of light. And he took me into a room. It was really strange because the ship, it was definitely made out of light, and it was really solid light, but it was we could walk through it. It's really hard to kind of get my head around as a 9-year-old boy anyway. And he took me into this room where he all of a sudden just manifested this very large book, and every single page of the book we went through, there was 144 pages of that book. After looking at those pages, he then returned me to my bed, back in Plymouth in the southwest of England. Then it wasn't until I was 27 years old that I had that inner kick to start writing that book. Mm-hmm. Which I did start doing. After the first 5 pages, as usually seems to happen, my marriage collapsed, my life completely just flipped over 180 degrees, you know? Mm-hmm. excuse me. And I decided then that I would... See, I'd had a previous experience that I'd been to some spiritualist churches. Quite a few of my friends that I'd been to school with had decided to commit suicide, all independently of each other. And that kind of pushed me towards spiritualist church because I wanted to, you know, find out what had happened. And while I was at the church, I had a very little old lady, very frail lady, she spoke to me with an enormously huge voice that was definitely not hers. And she basically directed me to go to India, which, because I was now fairly newly divorced and had money in my pocket, I thought, okay, I'll do that. What else have I got to do with myself, you know? So I rolled up the first 5 pages with me, and I took them to India. I managed to get to Bangalore, and I got to a place called Whitefield, which is one of the suburbs of Bangalore, and I found an ashram, which at the time I had no idea what an ashram was. I didn't know any of this stuff at all. I'd just been a working family man in England, you know? And with going into the ashram, there was that same little man that had manifest when I was 9 years old. Well, he had not aged at all. And I'd gone from 9 to 20. Well, no, I was about 32 by the time I'd got there. And that little man was Satchel Sai Baba.
Oh, right. And, yeah.
And as soon as I...
Hello, are you there?
Yes, I'm still here, I think. Can you hear me?
Right. You were saying that as soon as you met him, and then you seemed to lose contact just for a few seconds.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, so what happened when you met him the second time?
When I realized that was the same guy that had turned up in my bedroom, amongst the tens of thousands of people that were there, he turned directly to me and walked through all of those people. So, of course, I thought, oh, great. These are your pieces of paper. Here's your book. And he just touched them. And with that touch, my life completely changed again. Within 4 days after that, I was up in the Himalayan mountains at a very specific cave system called Patal Bhuvaneshwar. Oh, what was that noise? I was at a place called Patal Bhuvaneshwar where I was directly shown that the first 10 pages of the book are directly linked to the 5 double helix of DNA that is presently dormant within the human being. I was shown and told this by Satchel Sai Baba himself. Are you guys still there?
Yes, indeed, yes.
Okay.
I'm listening to what you're saying. I would like to go back just a little bit. When you said you were on the UFO and you looked at the pages,
yes,
did you then immediately, to your knowledge, absorb the information that was in it?
Absolutely, yeah. I took it all. I didn't take it in on a mental... It wasn't a brain thing. It's definitely much more than a brain thing. The brain, you know, I still look at these things today, and it's in a language that the brain cannot understand, but the body will absorb it so easily. And I've been really fortunate that I've traveled around the world with these things, and I've watched other people of every different background, of every different ethnicity. I've watched them. Some people actually have physically changed in front of my eyes. It's for me, it's been really incredible. You know, I've seen so many changes with this, and I've got to the point now where I've been able to develop a tincture, which is the vibrational energy of the first 10 manuscripts that I've got now in a liquid form, that I've been finding has been working extremely well with a lot of people that have what modern doctors say are mental health problems, etc., etc.
Yeah.
This stuff has been really incredibly helpful for a vast amount of people. And as I say, I've been really fortunate to be able to actually witness all of this, you know.
So from the age of 9 years old to when you realized that you had to do something with the scripts, were you developing yourself sort of spiritually? Were you searching for knowledge? I mean, because to come into it at 27... and then understand it to the extent that you did sounds rather remarkable.
From the age of 9 up until 27, really, I came from, you know, a military background. My father was in the Navy. We didn't go to church. We weren't a religious family or anything like that at all. But I found I was having an awful lot of visitations from flying ships. I could see what we, back then, I called them ghosts. I used to sit and chat with them. A lot of them were my friends. You know, we'd play music together, really strange. I'd have ghosts that would come into my room and they'd play my cassette recorder of music, and they'd skip different songs. And it was... So for me, it wasn't weird. it was pretty weird that other people weren't having this. That was the problem I kind of went through, that why isn't anyone else kind of seeing this? Why isn't anyone else hearing it, you know?
Yeah.
So I never really searched for anything. That all happened pretty much the minute Sai Baba touched those manuscripts that were in my hands. I've been sent to many, many places, and I've spent a lot of time with various indigenous peoples around the world, and they get the manuscripts real easy, and they've given me a far wider insight into the workings of a lot of these. Because, you know, I'm specifically now talking about the first 10 pages. I have more than 10 pages that are fully complete. Every single page I have done to date have been back physically to Satya Sai Baba. He has physically touched all of them and basically said, yeah, cool, no problem. They all, again, have been into the cave system at Patal Bhuvaneshwar. And if any of your listeners don't know of the cave system at Patal Bhuvaneshwar, but please look it up on YouTube or on Google or something. There's some lovely pictures there, and there's some really interesting stories from some people that have been there.
Yeah,
you know, it's really an incredible place. Mm. So that would take me a long time just.
Well, you seem to have taken to your task or your mission very easily. It doesn't sound as though you were frightened by the prospect of what you were involved in. And, of course, I would say, and lots of others, that you clearly had this mission already in place as your life plan. So I guess subconsciously you accepted it because you knew indeed this was what you were meant to do. Is that how you see it? Hello, Simon. Have we still got you there?
Are you still there? Is anybody there? Hello?
Right.
Sorry about that. I just seem to have gone offline, but I've managed to find us back again. Oh, right. Sorry.
Okay. I was about to ask you a question. Well, I did actually, and you weren't there. So I'll repeat it now. From what you're saying, you seem to have accepted your mission very easily, and I'm making the point here that subconsciously you must have known that this was arranged to happen in your lifetime. So is that indeed the way it happened?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah. I was always very much aware as a child that there was something more, something much, much more. I kind of didn't tend to fit in with a lot of the way that society kind of worked, and I still particularly don't, but that's a lot of that still by choice, I think. I kind of always had a knowing. I just always had a knowing. And after the first incident that happened as a 9-year-old, then that just kind of propelled me. And some doors were open. Some pathways in my brain were just switched on, and I just accepted everything very easily. I knew that I'd come here to do something, and believe me, do something I will do. No, nothing's going to stop me. Nothing's going to stop me fulfilling the mission that has been given to me. Nothing at all. So I will keep forging ahead. Absolutely. You know, I think...
Do the manuscripts follow some kind of pattern? I mean, do they progress in a way that they gradually give, higher and higher information so that you can build up gradually where your understanding is concerned?
Definitely they do, yeah. I think that the first 10 are very specifically important because that then once you've worked with the first 10 and you've integrated them, you will have a far, you will even have an understanding of all of the rest. I mean, some of the pages, you know, further on in the book are definitely machines that I have to make. They won't actually, I won't be able to reproduce them on a two-dimensional form like I am presently with these, the ones that I've got now. I'd love to be able to bring these out as holograms because they're so layered. They're just so incredible.
If someone read the first 10 pages,
yes,
is it all about the human DNA? Or I mean, where would they sort of stand after that, after reading the first 10?
They're not just about human DNA, but they are. They will re-encode the dormant DNA that we switched off our own. It's kind of really hard to explain, but we've already been through this game of life that we call it six times, I think. Yeah. And our future self that we have already become, because time is not a linear thing, the future self that we have already become came backwards to our past self in order to turn off this DNA specifically so that we could then move through the whole of life again, but we would be able to understand a whole range of emotions that we never got the first time around with all of this working. It was kind of too easy, let's say. And I'm putting this extremely simply, okay? So our future self came back to a point and switched this stuff off. We have now reached the point where we need to turn it all back on again so we expand to become the future selves that we already are, and our future selves that we already are will expand, and the whole universe as we perceive it will expand, etc., etc. Does that make sense?
Fine, yeah.
Cool.
And would we be correct in interpreting this expansion or this growth as part of the ascension process that's going on now?
Absolutely. Absolutely part of the ascension process. I think it's a huge part of the ascension process. You know, and I do believe that there will reach a point where, you know, like we call the 100 monkey syndrome, there will be a specific amount of beings that will re-encode themselves through whichever way they do it, and that will then kind of drag with us or push forward all of the others, because we'll reach that 100th monkey syndrome.
Hmm. So are we actually heading towards linking up again with our higher self?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
So what is contained in your documents is helping people to rise again to that level. Would that be correct?
Massively helping them, yes. Absolutely. You know, this is something I've been watching. See, I've had these for quite a long time, and it's only very recently that I've decided, or that I've kind of been pushed by my boss to bring this out to a much wider public in general around the world, you know, because now is a definite time for this to happen. You know, there are other agendas going on that maybe a lot of people are unaware of that are trying to slow down and or stop this process. That's not going to be allowed to happen. And I must stress that again, that is not going to happen. So there are, like myself with the information I have, there are others around with other information, and we are going to go forward and we are going to expand. Absolutely believe it, please. Don't doubt that. You know, there are a lot of little boys out there playing silly games. Well, the children will be allowed to stay playing, but many of the children.
Do you see the end of this cycle, as per the Mayan calendar, the 21st of December this year, as a very key point in the ascension process?
I do, yes. This was something I spent time with the Mayan elders. I spent quite some time with a guy called Hunbutsman, who was the chief Mayan elder. I was able to pass him the first 10 pages that he's definitely integrated very well. excuse me. The end of the Mayan calendar is not the end of the world or anything like that. It's the beginning of the end of how the world as it is today. The world as it is today needs to come to an end. But that doesn't mean the world's going to end. Absolutely, it's not. Just the way it is today. Many systems need to be shut down.
So they will be. We're talking about people raising their vibrations and their level of consciousness. It is thought that the Earth itself will also ascend with those souls.
She will. She will. We're all one thing. There is no separation. Yeah. The separation only is within our mind. Mm-hmm. When we remove the veil, we see that there is no separation. The planet, ourself, each individual form of life is just one thing. So if there is going to be the expansion, every single life form will expand. Every single thing. Those that choose consciously not to, and there will be those, they won't. They will be allowed and they will be given a place that their vibration can understand. There's no God's wrath or there's no, oh, you're going to whatever. We're all going to expand if we consciously choose to. And if we consciously work toward that within our individual self to raise our individual vibration, which will collectively it's like if you light a match and then someone else lights a match and someone else lights a match, all of a sudden you've got a huge light. That's kind of the same thing.
Right. Now, I know that you've literally just come from a transformation conference which was held in London. Yes. At St. Pancras. And if I read it correctly, part of your conference there was referring to messages from the angelic realms and spiritual hierarchy. If that is so, would you like to comment on some of the features of the conference?
So, sorry, can you say that again, please? I missed some of that.
Yeah. Well, I'm correct, aren't I? I'm thinking you've just come from the transformation conference.
Yes, I have.
Okay. I was linking that with messages that you receive from the angelic realm and the spiritual hierarchy, and I wondered whether that was a feature of what you must have spoken about at the conference, and if you would like to comment on it.
That wasn't a feature that I was commenting on. Actually, that's Vitaly.
Okay.
He was actually... I was specifically there to bring to... people's consciousness, the encodement, re-encodements for the DNA. That's what I was trying to do. I think Vitaly was the one bringing all the other messages himself.
Okay, fine.
Because we work quite close.
Yeah. Okay, let me try and get something clear here. You're talking about the DNA, and if I got this right, it's going to be restored. It was thought to be dormant or was dormant before. So what would the person have to do to, if you like, activate the DNA?
I do have some techniques for, let's say, quick activations. Mm. Again, I'm speaking very simply indeed. But I do have some techniques for some very quick activations. Otherwise, I think if people use these manuscripts, and I think people should use all 10, number 1 and number 6, number 2 and number 7, 3 and 8, yeah. 4 and 9, 5 and 10. They are actually correlated directly to the each double helix that we have dormant presently. I have a specific layout for them that I was told and shown by Sai Baba inside the cave at Patal Bhuvaneshwar. So I explain this to people, and see, because everybody is here at a different stage within their own evolution. So for some people, they will get it extremely quick. Other people will definitely get it, but their mind might interfere with them along that process. So for each person, it's kind of a little bit different. I have to, if I'm sat with people myself, I can work through that. That's not a problem. If people are at home working with these things or with groups, which is much better to work with a group, I find that the tinctures definitely help. Definitely help in that situation. And pretty much, if you follow your intuition and follow the tones that you intuit within your own self, you can just spend time viewing the manuscripts, and the brain will eventually shut up and let you get along and do it, because the brain will run around and try and compartmentalize for quite some time. But just with the viewing of them, and as I say, intuitively voicing your tones, your body will just absorb this stuff, and all of a sudden things will change for you, and you will be aware that that's happening. They're very, I think, very quite easy to work with. But then I've had them for many years, and they've just been doing their thing, you know?
Right, so are you saying that it contains words that have the right tones to sort of activate your DNA?
This language will
carry on.
Look, you can only read the vibration that comes through the manuscripts. Absolutely. You can't look at them and think there are words. There's, you know, there are very many. Oh, it's really hard. I'm sure. Did Vitaly actually send you one? So that
no.
you could actually view it yourself?
Well, if he did send me one, I didn't receive it, so I haven't read any of your manuscripts, no.
Right, okay. I thought he had sent one. It's not in any language that the brain's going to understand at all. There's no one on this planet that's going to teach you this language. Sai Baba knew the language. Babaji knows the language. I had a physical manifestation of Babaji when I was up at the cave at Patal Bhuvaneshwar. We sat and talked for an hour.
Right.
He told me a lot of stuff.
Are you saying that
exceptionally...
if you don't know the language, you won't get the right tone? So
absolutely.
It needs
not
someone like yourself to read it.
I'm not
it
saying that at all.
To give it the right one.
You will find that you intuitively will find a tone or some tones within you that will want to come out of your voice box. Allow that to happen. Follow your intuition. Just allow those tones to come out. Because as I say, everyone is at a different stage within their own individualized evolution. Some people's tones will be different from other people's tones. The information that some people get will seem to be more than others, or less, or more expansive. There isn't really a more or less. If you drop a stone into a water, the ripples ripple out and they come back. It kind of works in a similar way. There's no higher or lower. Nobody really, I think, will actually understand the language by looking with their eye, trying to read it in a linear way. It's not going to happen. Really not. You have to just intuitively allow, you know, I've heard some people scream. I've heard some people purr like cats. I've heard some people make sounds like dolphins. It's those intuitive tones that just want to come out. Your body will look at these things, they will read them, and you really will want to express in one way or another. if you can relax yourself and allow yourself to express, that will help your vibration within your own self. It will give your body a greater understanding. Your body will read this thing. Your brain will not. You know? Brain's only an engine. We're the driver. You know?
Yeah. Now, I think after the initial manuscripts were handled by you, I read that in the following 22 years, you wrote another 35 manuscripts. Now, are you already using the other manuscripts, or aren't
personally,
we ready
myself,
for them yet?
Myself, personally, yes, I am.
I gather they are placed in what you've referred to as sacred locations around the world. Why would that be?
Because our planet, as you say, is also going to expand.
Yeah.
And the orchestrators of the other agendas, let's put it that way, they have placed certain things in certain places. They've made sure there have been very specific bloodlettings in very specific places over quite a few hundreds of years. That needs to be changed. That needs to be cleaned. That's what I have been doing with some of my people. That's probably the easiest way to answer that one.
I see. So when you've travelled around the world placing the manuscripts in various sacred locations, you've actually been helping to cleanse the earth itself.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Mm.
And it's only because, you know, I've been directed by the same little man that came to me as a 9-year-old. He's with me all the time.
Yeah.
And he says, go, I go. I don't question, I go.
Right.
I do what I'm told.
I find it funny when you say little man, but on the other hand, although I've never met Cy Barber, I gather he is rather short.
Physically, he was short. But yeah, you can fit an awful lot in a small package.
Right, now, somewhere down the line, you've spoken about lost knowledge from the Atlantean times. How does that come into the manuscripts, or is that something else that is of interest to you?
Okay. Originally, see, as I say, we're all at a different point in evolution as beings here.
Hmm.
So I originally was in a place that we kind of call Atlantis, and mine was the kind of my responsibility to keep and hold specific information. Now, all of this very specific information that I kept and held was stored onto mica, and mica is a type of crystal, and it was. All of this stuff was magnetically stored onto mica. Now, with the demise of Atlantis, I chose to stay with that information, which was lifetimes after that kind of really lost, really, really, really lost.
Hold on a minute, Simon. When you were talking about that, the last couple of sentences, you faded right away and there was like a break in it. So could you repeat what you said about it being stored in the mica?
Yeah. All of the information was stored in mica magnetically, and the moon was used for doing that. With the demise and the what we think of the destruction of Atlantis, all of this stuff kind of was lost into what we would consider today like the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
Now, various lifetimes since then, or pretty much straight after those, found me really quite lost. And I was searching frantically for this stuff, obviously not able to find it and having a very hard few lives. Which I'm sure we've all had, and that's cool, that's just part of the game. When I was 9 years old and Sai Baba showed me this book, I knew that the book he was showing me was the original book that I had. Now, that original book that I had, I am now reproducing again for the now time with exactly the same information that I had originally back then. And I say back then, time isn't linear. It's not back then. It's actually still now. But that's, again, that's another whole program in itself, you know?
Okay. I'm sure you must be then familiar with the crystals that are deposited around the Earth, which apparently at some stage will all be activated and push on the ascension process. But what do you know about these large crystals? I believe there's one, or perhaps more, in Arizona, for example.
There are quite a few around the world. Quite a few around the world. And this is only my understanding, so, you know, don't everyone have their own feelings on this, but this is my understanding that as we look at around the world, we see other human beings and we think they're separate from us and separate individuals, etc. Each of us have heart, each of us have other organs, each of us have the Atma, each of us have the divine spark within our heart, etc. So does the planet. We are one thing. So when we look around the planet, we say, oh, look, there's a look at that. For me, all of these big crystals, all of this big stuff is part and parcel of what makes the heart of the planet. What makes the movement of the planet. And just as we're going to raise our vibration, our planet will also raise its vibration. As we have the impetus to push us forward, so will our planet. What will give us that impetus? We have that hidden something within us. Our planet has that hidden something within her. And we're looking at these crystals. This is part of that for her. It's nothing separate. It's nothing that we think, hey, if we take this crystal, it'll help us. No, let's leave the crystal there. Leave the gold there. Leave the diamonds there. How dare we take the oil? You know, if I get a mosquito or two mosquitoes on my arm and they're sucking my blood, it makes me a bit annoyed and I want to swap them off. Our planet has been so beautiful and so loving to us that we've been sucking this oil out of her for 100 years or so. She still hasn't yet swatted us off. That's how much she loves us. That's how much she wants us to expand with her.
So, do you talk in terms of dimensions, for example, that we are in the third now? And if you do, what do you think, which dimension do you think we will be moving up into?
I believe we're going to be moving up into a fifth. But there will be, excuse me, there will be those that can move up to 7th, 9th, 11th, 13th. But I think most, the vast majority of beings here today will jump into the 5th.
So what will be the main differences that we would experience as opposed to this dimension?
Lack of limitation, immediate materializations of thought. There will be this is just, again, this is only what I'm saying. I really don't want everyone to say that's true. Yes, that's true. Let's believe him. I really don't. I want people to feel this for their own self. But there will be no need to consume. So when we're not consuming, we're not killing. When we're not killing, there is a very, very vastly different thought processes that go through the pathways in the brain, because they're not weighed down by negativity. That will not be there. We will be free. We will be What we consider today, and what people have considered, you know, for years and years, as, well, when you die, you go to heaven, will kind of be in that, what we perceive as heaven space, you know?
Yeah.
And when people think, oh, when we die, death doesn't happen. Death is just a man-made concept, you know? It doesn't happen. It's just life after life after life. Now, we can choose to continue that life retaining the same physical form that we have, or we can change that physical form as often or as when often as we like. The physical body is the vehicle. The brain is the engine. But as the driver, we are free to drive. We shouldn't just let this vehicle and engine drag us here, there, or anywhere, because we will always crash. We must drive our own vehicle. And we can step in... Sorry.
In what way do you think our physical bodies will change so that we're ready to move into the fifth dimension?
We definitely will move into the fifth dimension. Our planet is going that way. We can choose to go with it or not, but that is going to happen, absolutely. How do we do that? We raise our vibration, and we raise our vibration by removing the negativity, by our understanding of nonviolence, with compassion, and just by being loving. Just loving. Love is just exceptionally powerful thing. You know, man has built atomic bombs, and man thinks, wow, look how powerful we have this power over the whole. Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. You know, love is far, far more powerful. You know, prayer.
Do you think that our bodily vibrations will rise to the point where we will no longer experience aging?
Sorry, say again?
Do you think that our vibrations will rise to the point where we will no longer experience aging?
No, we won't. Of course not. Our cellular structure will be so different. We are very gross at the moment. We're a very gross, heavy thing. Enlightenment means many different things. And, of course, we won't age. Time doesn't really exist. Time exists within the third dimension. But that's pretty much all. And time isn't linear. It's kind of a conical shaped thing, time. And yes, you can move around within it.
Right. When you said in that higher dimension there were no limits, what did you mean by that?
Sorry, could you say that again?
Yeah. When you said there are no limits in the fifth dimension, what did you mean by that? Give me some examples.
Okay, at the moment, if I want to, let's say I want to go and visit my brother who lives in Australia, I have to pick up a telephone to call him to let him know I'm coming. Then I have to travel to get on an aeroplane. Then I have to fly. No, that won't be needed. Our thought process, we will travel like light. We travel on, how do I explain? We won't, whatever we think, and whatever we think with our open heart, we will achieve. So just the same as Sai Baba, Babaji, Swami Sunil Das, Gopala Krishna Swami, all of these other beings that I've, physical beings that I've met on this planet, they physically manifest things. They think something, bang, pop it out of their hand, there it is, there and then. Physical thing that I still have today. It's exactly the same as that. We will do the same thing. So when I, for example, would think, I want to go and visit my brother, by the time I have finished that thought process, I am with my brother. There is no aeroplane. There is no fossil fuel that I have to pump into a combustion engine that chuffs out all of this poison to get there. You know? Those limits will cease to exist. They won't be there. That's a third dimensional thing, and we're moving out of that sphere. It's no longer going to be necessary, and it's archaic.
So it sounds pretty wonderful. Where do you think extraterrestrials come into this equation?
Extraterrestrial. Okay, yeah. I'm not coming from this planet. Absolutely. Right. But are they part and parcel of our future selves that we have already become, that are watching over us to make sure that as we expand, they expand?
Yeah.
We are all one thing. Every form of life is just one thing. That doesn't limit us to every form of life on this planet is one thing, but every form of life on a planet is another thing. Absolutely not. Every form of life is one thing. Is there life on other planets? Absolutely. Are all forms of life carbon-based? And definitely not. You know, there are many, many forms of life. Many, 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 many forms of life. We are surrounded by it. The space in between myself and yourself right now is not an empty space. It is jam-packed full of life. So are they extraterrestrial? I don't seem to personally see it in that way. I don't see it as like little green men from Mars. I don't see it in that way. But, as I said, there are other agendas going on. You know, so there are a lot of people on this planet that have specifically had their eyes and ears closed to things vibrationally. Mm. But that is all being taken away, and that's going to come to an end, whether they like it or not.
And that have you ever met any yourself?
Oh, yes, yes.
Would you like to tell us about some of your experiences?
I don't know, really, because everyone's going to think I'm really mad.
No. Not my listeners. They're quite aware, and they've heard many people on this program talking about their contacts.
Right. I remember very well when I was after nine, when I was like 10, 11, 12, 13 years old, I used to constantly get taken on board ships, and I was specifically shown how the engines work, how the navigational systems work. I used to draw all this stuff, and, you know, my mum and dad thought I was really crazy, so I stopped talking to anybody about it for very many years. Contact that I've had has always been really, really, really personal. And I've been told a lot of things that I'm not really sure if I want to share with people, to be honest, because a lot of people might find it really difficult. It's like after my 10 pages, if people started reading pages 11 onwards before they've read the first 10 pages, they're going to freak out.
I mean, have you ever been on board a mothership? Did you hear the question, Simon?
I'm connected. Hello.
Right, Simon, I was coming to the point of asking you whether you had been on another ship.
Okay. Just from my point of view, the cave system at Patal Bhuvaneshwar, and this is specifically my point of view.
If a vehicle
had been needed in order to, let's say, inject life onto this planet, the cave system at Patal Bhuvaneshwar is that vehicle. inside that vehicle is many, many, many different vibrations. You can, from there, connect yourself to a lot of different things and a lot of different places. I mean, as I'm talking to you right now, I can see so much stuff in front of me. It's unbelievable. Yeah. Now, when you talk about a mothership, I'm assuming you're talking about one that's actually really quite big, with what we would call commanders and those that are directing things. Then if you're talking about that, yes, I have been. They also connect to there are quite a lot of pyramids that are what we would call at the bottom of the oceans on this planet that are already full of beings, just the same as we call extraterrestrials on these motherships. They're already down there. They've been waiting there for a long time. They're connected to that. They're all ready to go. They've been working for a long time. I personally have spent a lot more time in those pyramids at the bottom of the sea with what a lot of people have called the meetings of the conclave, I think people call them today. I've met with an awful lot of... I kind of sat around a lot of tables and looked at a lot of maps, is the really basic way I can explain it. Yeah. So motherships floating around in space. Yes, I've been on, but most of the time I've spent mine on what I would consider to be the directors of that on this, on the planet, our planet, this one here. Yeah. And don't want to say too much more about that because I don't want to get myself in trouble with any of them either.
Now we're broad-minded. We can listen to your views. Now, I'm intrigued by pyramids at the bottom of the ocean in the sense that if you met the people there, are you talking about meeting them on a slightly higher vibrational level?
Yes. Yes, yes. I've been able to exit this physical form, because this is only my vehicle and the driver can step out at any point, just the same with anyone that's listening and yourself. We can all do exactly the same and you can take yourself anywhere. So by all means, take yourself down there and go and have a chat with these guys, you know?
I mean, you must be aware and have heard of the pyramid that's been sighted occasionally off Bimini. Can you tell us anything about that one?
Not particularly, no. I don't really know too much about that one. I've spent a lot of time somewhere else. Somewhere else. Yeah, with different dudes. To my understanding, though, that's what was part of what we consider Lumeria stroke Atlantis. There is a gentleman, if any of you listeners and yourself would like to look up, he's a gentleman... Serbian gentleman called Vladimir Labat, L-A-B-A-T, Vladimir Labat. Now, he's a Lumerian guy, and he has some incredible, incredible bits and pieces. He's been bringing highly, highly vibrational music that is played on some extremely strange looking instruments that's extremely powerful. I would definitely advise you to look him up and listen to this music and just let that work through you, because that will also help wake up lots of parts of people's memories. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I'd like you to spell the name again, if you would be, so that people have time to make a note of it, please, Simon.
Okay. Vladimir, it's Vladimir, I think, Vladimir, yes. Labat, Labat.
Labat. Right, yep. I don't know why, that seems to ring a bell, but I can't remember seeing any of his work, so his name must have cropped up. What you're if we Google his name, we'll come to his website, is that the idea?
You will do. You'll come to either his website and or his music.
Oh, right.
I mean, he's living in a place called Fruška Gora, which is a most beautiful, beautiful slightly mountainous range in northern Serbia. It's where there was a let's say the orchestrators of the other agenda decided they wanted to dig it all up and mine there. So they moved in a whole load of their earthworking equipment, and overnight, when they came back the next day, all of their earthworking equipment was at the bottom of a huge lake that had appeared overnight, and that lake is an extremely, extremely healing place. A lot of vibrational, highly vibrational working people have moved into that area. So this is a place called Fruška Gora in northern Serbia. Please, people, look it up. Look it up. This was somewhere that the Americans were absolutely unable to bomb during their play on their agenda. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
Well, they were unable to do it because the vibrations were so high. Is that what you're saying?
Just the vibrations are so high, yeah. They were actually... pilots that have been spoken to afterwards have said that they couldn't actually see the place with their eyes, or their instrumentation in whatever they were in was also unable to see it. So it never got bombed, which was brilliant.
That's interesting, yeah. But going back as a point of interest here, I suppose you must have heard, and I'm thinking about pyramids here, about the pyramids that were discovered not too far back in Bosnia.
Yeah, fabulous. I don't really know much about them, but I was really pleased to hear that they've been found. And very recently, my wife and two children, because my wife is Serbian.
Yes.
And we actually met, Sai Baba put us both together. That was quite interesting. But she's just returned from 2 months in Serbia, and they were at a place called Kaponik, which is quite a tourist place, but there's another huge pyramid there as well that still hasn't been spoken about, I don't think. But they will find that these pyramids predate the Egyptian pyramids. That's what they will find. And they will find that there's various information there.
Right, because I'm also... pyramids, Simon. What do you think the purpose is for the Giza pyramid?
For making energy, for providing energy.
Yeah. And is it still working now?
Well, the caps have been taken off. All of the pyramids were capped.
Yeah.
They all had some form of crystal as caps, and they've all been smashed off over the years. I mean, Napoleon had a right laugh doing all of that stuff, you know. But it is known that very soon indeed, there are a couple of specific tones that over the years, many, many, many hundreds of thousands of tones have been made by the Sphinx. There are a couple more tones that need to be made there. And there is a specific doorway in one of the front paws of the Sphinx that will be opened. And because everybody knows, well, I think everybody knows anyway, that there's a big system of tunnels under there that have got a lot of information about our original origins. It has various different, what we would probably call machines that can clean up the pollution on this planet within 24 hours, that can provide us with all the energy we need, completely clean, completely free, completely everything, etc., etc. It's all in there just waiting. And that's going to be, let's say, refound very soon.
Right. Yes, I recall that in Edgar Cayce's readings, he spoke of the Sphinx, and he said it contained what he called, I think, the Hall of Records.
Yes. Absolutely correct.
So, I think there was some thought not too long back that when the Sphinx was boarded in so that you couldn't see what was going on, and that was when Hawass was still there, that they were in fact trying to find the Hall of Records by...
They have
going through one of the pores, as you say.
But they won't find it. Wrong people, wrong vibrations.
They
look as much as they like. They'll be led down various other different pathways, and they might think they found all sorts of wonderful treasures, but that would just be smoke and mirrors. Good.
Right.
They're the wrong ones.
So, just going back to Atlantis very briefly again, do you remember other parts of your life in as much were you in Poseidon, or did you ever visit any of the Atlantean colonies?
All I can pretty much recall is various other, let's say, people, and the fact that I spent most of my life quite secluded. I spent most of it within a very specific pyramid doing a very specific work. So,
okay,
that's
that was on ground level. You're talking about a pyramid on the Earth itself.
Yeah.
And, I mean, was that in Poseidon, which I would have thought was the equivalent to the capital?
No, I wasn't in the capital. Definitely not. I was myself and some specific others that I am actually in contact with today. Unfortunately, one of them actually turned up at the Transformation Conference, and that was just wonderful to meet him again. Mm. That was wonderful. So I know my time is right, and he knows his time is right, so that's cool. But we were, let's say, in what would be called even further away than a suburb. We would have been what would have been known as a village, because we used to have a lot of visitations by what we today call extraterrestrials in there, what we call today spaceships. And it was a lot of their information that was coming. And when I say there, we weren't separate from them. But I'm just trying to put it in a human way so that we can understand a linear way of putting things, yeah?
Right.
So we were visited often by spaceships and extraterrestrials who would, let's say, give us information. That information would be then used and stored. And it was partly because of that a lot of... a lot of lower vibratory stuff came as well because of jealousies, greeds, etc., etc., etc. And that's, to my understanding, what made a huge imbalance. And that huge imbalance then expanded, and then everything collapsed, and then some of us had to, or some of them had to run to different corners of the world. And that's why we have different pyramids we have the same pyramids, but in different parts globally. That was all the same guys. You know, it's the same guys walking around. You know, it's like the Hindu tradition have the 18 siddhas, you know? Same dudes. They were the same guys that were all the way back then. Some of them still have retained their same physical form. Yeah, and that sounds really ridiculous. How can they have the same physical form for tens and 20,000s, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, of years? Yes, they still do. That isn't unheard of, believe me. It really isn't.
Yeah. That's very interesting. I mean, this particular pyramid presumably sunk below the sea when Atlantis broke up. Would that be so?
Yes.
I mean, did it survive it and end up intact on the seabed, or did it sort of break up?
No, most of it is all still intact.
So, will that rise up again in the future?
Well, that depends on how we are collectively. A lot of how things are going to happen will depend on us collectively. Yeah, it's all going to happen and it is all going to change, but the severity or the ease of it is down to us. So that's a question that I can't specifically answer.
That's interesting. Because I gather that Atlantis, was an enormous blame that, that it actually embraced the part of America that still remains today.
Yeah, only a tiny, tiny bit. But I think it's Tamil Nadu. Down in Tamil Nadu, you will still find that what we called Atlantis, part of it is still actually there, but still being lived on, still above ground, above water, that's been there all the time. This is why so many what we call avatars, high beings, or whatever, manifest themselves there.
Yeah.
You know, so many people, why did you go to India? Why this? Why that in India? Why? Because it still has an original vibration.
Mm.
And nowhere else that does, really. So if any listeners get the chance to go to Tamil Nadu, go, is my advice.
And better hurry up, I think, in view of the nearness of this ascension point. I think I've more or less exhausted my own questions here, and it's been very, extremely interesting talking to you.
Nice talking to you too.
Is there anything that you would like to talk about that I haven't touched upon?
The only really simple thing that I'd like to say, really, is people today are very worried. A lot of people are very scared. What's going to happen in the world? What's going to happen? Can I pay my rent? Can I pay my mortgage? Are my kids going to be okay? Is the world going to end? I think if everyone can, all the energy that they're spending on these thoughts, if they can spend that energy on thoughts of love, then they will have absolutely nothing to worry about whatsoever. And I think people are being and have been brainwashed by the media. We've been kept down as a race because of a specific agenda that's going on. That specific agenda will not win, absolutely will not happen. So if people can take out of their mind all of that negative stuff and replace it with positive stuff, that will make the process collectively very easy, very smooth. You know, if a woman's giving birth to a child and she's full of stress, it's going to be hard work for her and she's going to bleed a lot. But if a woman can give birth naturally, beautifully, in a totally loving environment, it's going to be simple and there's just going to be a lot of love.
Mm.
Which one do we want to choose for ourselves, guys, you know?
I mean, taking it realistically, do you think the last few months of this cycle will be rather catastrophic? I mean, do you think we'll reach a level where we can avoid a lot of things happening on the Earth that would be unpleasant?
Absolutely, we can reach that point. Yes, can reach that point. We've collectively, we've already made things a lot easier than they were going to be.
Yeah,
things were going to be worse than they have been. And we can continue to do so. Yes, there will be upheavals, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But as we know, they're always the good thing. We always know that in life, when change comes, it's always for the better. Hmm. But we can make that a lot easier for our planet and ourselves because we're the same thing. There is no separation between us.
Right.
Once we understand that, it'll be much easier, you know? It's really hard to explain. It's not hard to explain. It's easy to understand, but it's really difficult to understand. And, you know, I'd like to be able to just make it easier for everyone to understand. So if I can make sure everyone gets to see these manuscripts, then everyone can get a bit more turned on, All the layers of that onion can slide off. We can actually be who and what we actually are supposed to be. And it's going to be so easy for the planet to just wander on through then. Fabulous. You know, absolutely fabulous. So I'm 100% optimistic. I love us as a race. We're a beautiful being. We always have been. We always will be. And I love us all.
Yeah, well, that's certainly very uplifting, I must say. Just getting back to the manuscripts themselves, or copies, do you actually sell them, or do you only work with them with people?
No, I have now got I struggled with this for years. You know, do I go out into the public with all this and et cetera? But I've been told that I have to, so I'm doing what I'm told. So we now have the many, many, many sets of them printed up. Yes, that we do sell them, and I think it's great that people should get them. You know, we try and do them at a...
People have...
It's the same with the
tincture. This information is presumably on your website. If you have a website, would you like to give out the address?
Yeah, that will be... The website will actually be up and running properly, I think, in about 3 weeks, but it's... www.lifesakashicrecords.com.
You better repeat that, I think, Simon.
www.lifesakashicrecords.com. And that's LifesAkashicRecords. LifesAkashicRecords.com.
When you spelled Akashic, did you say A-K-A-H-I-C without an S in it?
A-K-A-S-H-I-C.
Got it. Okay, fine. Yeah, that's great.
And on there, you'll be able to...
Round it off now.
Sorry, could you say that again?
Did you want to say something there?
Hopefully, you know, once the site's built properly, I will be, there'll be lots of different testimonials from people that have already used this, people from the past, maybe some people might be from 20 years ago, so it'll be interesting for people to look at that. And I have a wonderful testimonial from a guy that was in Sai Baba's office. He was the only Western guy in Sai Baba's office for 5 years. And he watched me over the course of years coming to and from Sai Baba. And he has a wonderful, that it's really worth people seeing and listening to all of the stuff that's on there, because it will give them a deeper understanding. It's not just, this isn't just something that's come overnight. It's not, I haven't just all of a sudden turned up with these things. I've been working on these things for 40 years, you know?
Gosh.
Yeah, I'm 49 years old now, you know? Yeah. So this has been my entire life, basically. Right. And now is the time for it to come out. So there will be people speaking of 20, 25 years ago that various weird and wonderful things happened for them because of these things, you know? So.
Right. Well, I think you're doing a wonderful job there, and your story about these various aspects of life and ascension are very interesting, I must say. And I have to thank you very much for coming onto the programme. It's been great. So
thank you very much indeed for asking, you know, for allowing me to come on. I would like to ask if anyone's copied this interview, because I'm really not very good with computers, so I didn't know how to record it. But if anyone's made a recording of it, I would really like to have that. That would be great. So if BBS have done that, that would be great if I could somehow get a copy of this conversation.
You will be able to get an MP3 recording from the studio.
Excellent. I'll try and make sure Vitaly does that. Vitaly's really clever with all this. This is kind of a bit beyond.
Well, if he emails Don at BBS Radio, he'll arrange that for him.
Fantastic. Thank you very much indeed, Mike.
Oh, you'll be very welcome. Well, sure. Thanks again, Simon. It's been very, very interesting talking with you. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Excellent, and myself. And nobody worry. Everything's perfect. Just love, 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 love. And all of a sudden, the world will have no limits and everything will be great. Just love, love, love.
We'll be there, yes. Great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
That was very interesting. And next week I've got an equally interesting guest as far as I can see. I'm going to be interviewing Amy Vickers, who works with Lloyd Pye. And she's quite well informed on Lloyd's work to do with the Star Child skull, which was found in Mexico around 1930. And it's been tested and checked over, and the physical parts do not match with humans, and neither is it a hybrid human. So she's going to talk about all the interest in it and how it's been tested and what their conclusions are. So again, that should be very interesting. So thank you for being with me today, and I hope you can make it next week. God bless you all. Thank you.